notice this happening quite often when I'm very intense in meditation, is that there's a feeling of one stage during meditation quickly receding back into myself, kind of thing, and the awareness of body seems to slowly start to disappear too.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness of
mm-hmm.
conscious awareness of the body seems to start to quickly disappear with it, and then suddenly there seems to be a contorted awareness of the body. Everything seems to be twisted at all different angles. I don't know why, but it's, I think I lose it then because I try to straighten up the posture and nothing seems to do any good.
No, no. Mm-hmm.
I think you mm-hmm. have to just forget about it.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean contorted picture?
Well,
the leg is there and the
head seems to be, seems to be sideways, the body seems to be all twisted in all sorts of different directions. The awareness seems to give me that feeling. And if I try to just let the body with the breath stretch up straight, it doesn't seem, it just seems to go in all sorts of different strange things. I think the only thing is just to forget about it. Just be aware of it.
If you forget about it, you go to sleep.
Yeah.
You can't throw away the awareness of the body. Mm-hmm.
Mm. But you can by not trying to.
One possibility is that there is something. I'll explain to you the other way around. For instance, if somebody is sitting on a, especially on a chair, with only the feet planted on the floor and the hands on the knees, even the back is not resting on the chair. After some time, you feel as though your knee, your feet have gone far away in California probably. And your hands seem to be somewhere on the earth, but the head is about 3 miles away into the space. So that this distance is colossal, and this distance is also colossal. The distance from the shoulders to the hand is colossal, and the distance from the hand, which is also the knee, to the foot is also colossal. Because temporarily the awareness is lost in those parts of the body that are not in contact with something else. There is contact of the hands and the knees, contact of the feet and the floor, and the buttock contact is more or less ignored. That's all. Or probably the buttock contact is linked to the knees. The rest of it seems to be floating. On the same basis, it is possible that when you feel that you're neck is twisted or something like that, it may be because there is something sticking there. The collar is tight or a button is sticking out or something like that. If you observe very carefully, the sense of space or distance is totally funny. It's not distorted. I wouldn't call it distorted. It is disoriented, not distorted in the sense of, you know, muddled. The whole thing seems to stretch and expand beyond all proportion. Otherwise there is no problem. But this can happen. If something is hurting you in your waist, then that awareness becomes intense. The rest of it is lost somewhere. And it is possible for the waist or the spleen area to come up, and you feel the spleen is there and the head is somewhere there. That sort of thing is possible.
Something is not trying to change, just to be aware.
You cannot change anything. Yeah. You cannot change anything.
Yeah.
Unless if it becomes painful, then of course some change is indicated. If at that time, probably if you open your eyes, you will see what has gone wrong, where. Otherwise, there's the other thing that we have been discussing quite often. If while attempting to meditate, you are about to fall asleep, then of course something else can happen. Then it may even appear that you are lifting up from the ground, you are going to hit the ceiling, and while doing so you are tilting, the whole body is tilted, etc., etc. That's all mere sleepiness, that's all drowsiness, dullness. That doesn't happen when you are really meditating. But
it's not levitation.
It's not levitation.
It wasn't, didn't seem to be like that, it just seemed that some parts of the body seem to be aware, other parts seem to be able.
Yeah, that's possible.
Angles.
That is possible. That is possible only when there is contact. Only those parts of the body which have some contact are experienced, the others are not experienced.
You know, Swamiji, we were talking about meditation before, and what I'm interested in is really the space between two thoughts. Not really as an experience, but as a means of renewing that experience and analyzing what is that space.
The moment you analyze it, it goes away. The moment you analyze it, it goes away.
Right, but I'm not talking about the experience. I'm not talking as renewing the experience, thinking about the space between two thoughts, but in prospecting where that space is. For instance, that space, when you meditate, your meditation might not be successful. So therefore, there is no relation between that space and really the mantra. If your meditation is successful, then you can't relate the mantra to it because before it wasn't successful.
I didn't get that last sentence. If your meditation
you
is not
successful, you can't relate the space with the use of the mantra, for instance, because in some cases nothing happened. Sometimes something happened. So therefore, what happened is really within yourself, not because you have used the mantra. The mantra was only the object by which you have polarized within the body something. And that polarization, you know, when we were talking with Susan, you said this, you know, doing tapas, really, is what is conducive to a state, a static state. My view is tantric, because I don't have to do penance and, you know, introspect myself for a very long time, so I can separate the jiva from buddhi, so I get to that experience. But I think it's easier for a common person who is not a monk or not a swami to use a tantric method.
How?
Because that space really is a polarization or raising of the energy within the body, isn't it? That's what the question is, isn't it?
No.
It's not. It's not. Well, what is...
Because it is not raising the energy. Raising the energy is thought. Raising a thought.
Yeah, but no, but you're not raising the energy. The energy rises itself.
Then what happens?
If that state is a state of what you call bliss, bliss is also a state in which Shiva and Shakti are one.
Yeah, right. I was going to say...
Therefore there is the energy has come up.
I was going to say that it is not when the energy rises, but when the energy reaches its culmination in the Sahasrara.
But before it reaches up there, you've got to bring it out.
Then nothing happens. You are bringing it out, you are struggling, you are doing this, you are doing that. Like, I am doing the mantra. You are raising the energy in a tantric way, and that has the same effect as my repeating the mantra.
But the mantra is really no link with the experience, because in some cases you can't duplicate that experience.
Same thing. In some cases, in tantric cases also, you can't get the experience if the energy doesn't rise and follow the certain pattern and reach the Sahasrara. Nothing will happen.
So that space really is the space in which is expanding, in which...
The space in which there is movement of energy. Independent of consciousness.
So that space is also the field, to some extent. That space is also the field.
Yes, sure.
It is the field.
It's the field. But the field which for the time being seems to be independent, seems to be independent of consciousness. Energy that seems to be independent of consciousness. Movement of thought that seems to be independent of consciousness. It is not. Because it seems to be independent of consciousness, there seems to be space. Whether you follow a tantric method...
When you call space?
That's it. That is space. Space is a division. And whether you follow the tantric method, or you follow the yogic method, or japa method, or the Buddhist method of observing the thought itself directly, till this division ceases, that final experience is not had.
But you seem that the final ordinary person...
All of us ordinary persons. It is easier for an ordinary person than for an educated or person or knowledgeable person, because knowledge also forms a gap. When there is knowledge, the first thing you do is to analyze it. An analysis pushes the two things further apart. The gap widens with analysis. When you try to understand it, the gap widens. When you are thinking, the gap widens. When you do anything, the gap widens. Doing pushes the two things apart. Because it's creating more energy than you need. The energy and the consciousness. Any sort of doing pulls the energy away from consciousness. Whereas what we are really looking for...
Could that happen all as well with tantra?
Any doing. In tantra, you are rousing the energy and taking it to the Sahasrara, where the Shiva Shakti becomes one with Shiva. And in meditation, you use a mantra, and again the mantra has polarized the consciousness and the into the hearer. Sure.
Already you have achieved a certain degree of discrimination within yourself.
We
attain nearly a pure state.
We are, our consciousness is all the time polarized because thought is a polarizing agent. Because thought divides everything into the knower and the known. Observer and the observed. Subject and the object. That's the function of thought, and you cannot avoid it. As long as you are thinking, whether it is a spiritual thinking or a non-spiritual thinking, thinking divides.
If you are using an emotional approach when you are using your mantra...
Mantra is a thought, to begin with. And I am using the mantra, knowing that it is also another polarizing agent.
Right.
But I am using the mantra because I realize that I am helplessly polarized. Every thought that occurs to me polarizes this energy consciousness helplessly. As I think of anything, doesn't matter whether it is I am thinking of the Bhagavatam or coming here or going to the beach or playing football. Every thought polarizes consciousness into the subject and the object. it is possible for anybody, any ordinary person, immediately and directly to observe the thought and to realize that the thought itself is polarizing consciousness into subject and object. In other words, thought itself is a divider, creates a division within oneself. And when this observation examines without analysis the content of thought in relation to the subject and the object and understands or realizes that the three are in effect one, that the subject is consciousness, the object is consciousness, and thought also is consciousness, in which case the division is gone. Or if you are not able to do that, because thought might take thought away from thought. You understand what I mean? You think of one thing and the association takes you somewhere else. If you are afraid of that, then you introduce a mantra, which is a neutral catalyst. The mantra is not going to take you anywhere. The mantra is probably going to put you to sleep. That's the only thing it can do. And therefore you introduce the mantra, realizing that even this is a thought. But this is a thought which I have planted here. So, for instance, you can swim in the ocean, or you can swim in the swimming pool. But when you swim in the swimming pool, you are not afraid. Because you have created it, you know how deep it is, you know how what the temperature of the water is, and there is not the unknown quantity of swimming in the ocean. And so you dive into the swimming pool with great joy. It's all controlled. So, when you use a mantra, you realize you are putting this thought into your mind, and therefore you can watch it. It's very much like, when you have some stomach problem, they give you what they call barium meal, so that they can x-ray the whole thing. They can x-ray your intestines without the stomach and the intestines without the barium meal. But the problem doesn't show up. Now that they have injected this barium meal into you, they can watch for what they have put into you. So, this mantra is a barium meal. You swallow it, and then you keep looking for it. It is easy to look for it. Now that you have introduced it into yourself, it's simpler. It's easier for you to look for it.
Swamiji, is that why when you start to repeat the mantra, it seems to draw your attention back in?
Correct.
Whereas if you're just trying to watch thought,
Because as you are watching the thought is also flying away.
And you sort of go with
it. You also go with it. In a way, the tantric method, if by tantra you mean the contemplation of the chakras and so on, may be more effective in a way, because while a mantra, as she says, focuses one's attention upon oneself, the mind, and so on, it is still a very weak link, unless you are very keen on the mantra. It's a fairly weak link. Whereas, if you have a whole mandala to contemplate. The chakra, the element, and the devatas associated with it, the mantras associated with it, and all the rest of it, the element associated with it, the colors associated with it, with each one of them. Then there is a whole lot of thing to do. And so the mind is kept busy. And therefore, introversion of the mind seems to be very careful here, seems to be easier. But please remember that all the time the mind is really active. It is not really finding the self or consciousness. It's terribly busy. And so that busyness may also keep the gap wide open and lead us nowhere.
The strength of what you think experience, that if you experience higher before, the strength of it means, you know, can't.
No. You cannot repeat an experience.
Sometimes.
No. You cannot repeat an experience at all for the simple reason that in the first instance the experience happens. Then when you try to repeat that experience,
happen with the mantra.
No, sir. When, no, it will never happen. I'll tell you why. The first time it happens. The second time, when you try to repeat the experience, the mind produces an image of that experience and thinks it experiences the experience. I'll give you a very rather crude illustration. Have you ever had a headache?
Yeah.
Yeah? Headache?
Yeah, I had the experience.
You had the experience of headache? Wait. Please, no sir. Please answer my question. Have you had a headache? Have you ever suffered from a headache?
Oh, sometimes, yes.
So you've had it? Can you have an experience now? No. But it may come back to you. It may come back to you. At its own will. Can you not experience the headache? What do you mean? You can. And so you sit down, close your eyes, and say, it happened like that, and it happened like this, and it happened like that, and it happened like this. You can almost experience headache by imagining you have a headache. There is no headache, really. So, if you had a spiritual experience, you cannot make it happen again. Because it is given to you. That experience was given to you. When the mental activity ceased. That was the whole teaching of the Kathopanishad. That which is not the result of action cannot be gained by anything that you do. Spiritual experience is not the and anything that you do drives it away, makes it more distant, more impossible, if one can say so. Yes, Miriam?
I was just thinking how, wouldn't it be, it seems to me better to concentrate on the sound of my breath than an actual mantra.
Oh, me, beautiful.
Like another distraction, really? The breath is more of it's not the mind thinking of a mantra, it just is there.
Quite right. You're right. You can observe your own breathing. You can listen to your own breathing. And that is also a mantra. Yogis call it Ajapa mantra. That's called Ajapa yoga.
You know, they say that Om is the sound of all sounds.
they say, don't worry about that.
Yes, I was thinking, how do you know? Yeah.
That's why I say, if you ask them, they will give you some explanation. If you go to Sri Lanka, they use the word Om very often, yes? In the sense of yes. In a bolam, Om. Huh? Right? In a bolam. Shall we go? And she'll say Om. And she's not repeating any mantra or anything, she's merely saying yes. Incidentally, that's why I've put it in. I don't know if it's clear enough. There is a beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam. The story is that a demon had become the lord of the three worlds, and the gods wanted to regain the heaven, and so they went to Vishnu, and Vishnu wanted to help them, help the gods, and put on the disguise of a dwarf, and went to this demon and begged him, will you give me something? And the demon said, what do you want? And this dwarf said, I want only 3 paces of ground, not very much. And he said, okay, have it. While this demon king told the dwarf, you can have it. The demon's own guru stopped him. He said, you fool, this is Vishnu. The moment you say yes, he will become huge and he will take all your possessions away. And during the course of his discourse to his disciple, this demon guru, Shukracharya, says, if you go on saying yes, yes to everybody who comes to you, you will become a bankrupt. It's a very, very beautiful sentence. That is, if one goes on saying om, 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 om to everything, he pushes his prosperity away. You get it? Huh? One who says om, om to every request being made pushes prosperity and wealth away from him. Right? This is quite simple, isn't it? And out of that, they have evolved a funny superstition. And the superstition is that om should not be repeated by anyone except the swamis. Why is it so? Because if you repeat om, your prosperity goes away, your wealth goes away. Authority? Here, Bhagavatam. But unfortunately, the sense in which om is used there is yes. If you keep on saying yes, yes to everybody, everybody will take advantage of you and you will become useless. You lose everything. Whereas if you learn to say no, you will keep your wealth. Very nice idea. And of course, if you sort of understand the teaching with reference to the context, you realize that no is the mantra of the demons. Yes is the mantra of the gods.
What should humans do?
Sometimes say yes, sometimes no.
Open heart and a still mind. Is it purely the disciples? Is the guru just the energy, just the shakti, just flowing from the guru, and the disciple has to be receptive, sort of to receive it, or does the guru sort of direct it, like?
The guru directs it. But even if it is directed, if the disciple has, still has to do something.
Yeah. So it's not just flowing out to one and all.
It is flowing out to one and all. It is flowing out to one and all. But if I am not receiving it, I am not receiving it. Sorry, what can I do? What can the guru do? Poor thing. That's it. Initially people think that the guru will do everything. All that I have to do is to get there. But then once you get there and nothing happens, then the other thing.
32 years in the kitchen.
32 years in the kitchen, and then the next question will be answered.